Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Nehemiah chapter number 6. We've been looking at this fantastic story of Nehemiah coming to Judah, to Jerusalem, with the express purpose of getting the walls built. Now, he comes in 444 BC. He had been preceded almost a dozen or so years earlier by Ezra, who had started the rebuilding project, but because of political opposition and legal interference, was told to stop building the wall until express permission from King Artaxerxes had been given. Well, that has now been provided. Nehemiah arrived with all the signed documentation to allow him to get this wall built. Now, it is a wall that covers roughly somewhere in the neighborhood about 2 miles perimeter around the most ancient part of Jerusalem, which is the city of David to the south, as well as what we call the Temple Mount today in the north part, and then a little bit of a bubble probably off to the west of the Temple Mount area. And so that's what they've been working on to rebuild. Everybody is working on their section with a crew that they are intimately connected with, and they're tying in with the sections next to them. And it's all going up very rapidly and finally comes to its conclusion. That is, all the stonework is finished. And that's what's reported here at the beginning of Nehemiah chapter 6. Now, when Sanballat, remember, he's the bad guy that's living up probably at Shechem in Samaria to the north of Judah, and Tobiah, who is an Ammonite, Ammon is on the east side of the Jordan Valley, but this Tobias seems somehow to be tied in tightly with Sanballat and a whole bunch of people down in Judah. So he might actually be living in Samaria as well. And Geshem the Arab, he's another named enemy of the Jews during this time period. Don't know exactly where he's at. Arabia is basically all the places to the east of Ammon and Moab, and then south down through Edom area, and then even into the Sinai Peninsula itself. So it's a big wraparound area that we typically associate with Saudi Arabia and Jordan, and a little bit with Egypt. So Geshem is from somewhere in that region. He's an Arab. And then the rest of our enemies heard that I had built the wall and that there was no breach left in it, although up to that time I had not set up the doors in the gates. Apparently the way they're doing it is getting the stonework finished first and framing in the doorways, framing in the gateways, but they're going to hang the gates last. So they've got everything done except for the hanging of the gates, which means we're very close to the end of summer when that happens. Verse number 2. Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, "Come, let us meet together at Hakathiram in the plain of Ono." Now, the plain of Ono, as best we can locate it, is somewhere in the general vicinity of the Ben-Gurion International Airport today. So somewhere in that area. And why are they asking him to meet them there? It probably counted as neutral territory because it's not up in Samaria. It's not down on the Philistine coast. It's not over in Ammon or Moab or down in Arabia. It's at the edge of Judean territory. And so that's probably why they wanted him to come there. But how does he respond? He says, "But they intended to do me harm." So he already suspected that this was a plot. "So I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave and come down to you? Now that's interesting. It seems as if they had requested that he suspend the building project until after he had met with them. That seems to be implied by his response. And his attitude is, no, why should I stop to come and talk to you about anything? And so they sent to me four times in this way, and I answered them in the same manner. So four times they told him, look, you need to stop the building and come and chat with us about the situation. Verse number five, in the same way, Sanballat, for the fifth time, sent his servant to me with an open letter in his hand. In it was written, now we finally discover what was it that they were wanting to talk to him about. What were they hoping to gain by this meeting? And it's basically this. They believe that he was engaging in rebellion against the Persian Empire, and that he needed to stop it, or they were going to report it. So let's listen to the letter. It is reported among the nations, and that would be the non-Jewish people groups, and Geshem also says that you and the Jews intend to rebel. That's why you're building the wall. Now, when it talks about the rebellion here, it means rebellion against King Artaxerxes, rebellion against the Persian Empire, to basically declare the independent state of Judah. And that the first step for them is to rebuild the wall. Continuing with the letter. According to these reports, you wish to become their king. So some people are saying that Nehemiah intends to declare himself the new king of Israel. Further, verse 7, you have also set up prophets to proclaim concerning you in Jerusalem, there is a king in Judah. So they believe that he's even having religious figures, prophets, declare that he's the king. Now, none of this is true, but for them, it would provide the framework of a charge that they could bring against him in the courts of Persia, because that would be rebellion if he declared himself king. And then that's the kind of the threat they end with. Now the king will hear of these reports. So now come, let us take counsel together. So knock off the building, come and talk to us, and maybe we can work something out where we won't report you, and you can still kind of keep your position of authority. Verse number 8. Then I sent to him saying, no such things as you say have been done, for you're inventing them out of your mind. So Nehemiah knows that this is not true. He has not come here to be the king. He has only come here to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and allow it to start being lived in again by Jewish people, and for the Jewish homeland to have a nice capital city where worship can happen. He was not intending to rebel against his boss. Verse number 9. Here's his assessment of what the point of the letter was. For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking their hands will drop from the work and it will not be done. So he believes the only intention of this letter, the only intention of the meeting at the Plain of Ono, was to get them so scared of being reported to Artaxerxes that they would stop building the wall. Now, what does Nehemiah do? He responds like he often does. He prays. I love that part of the book of Nehemiah, is we have these little pop-up prayers that Nehemiah sends. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. So he says their plan was to make our hands weak and to give up on the job. God, strengthen my hands instead. Verse number 10. Now, when I went into the house of Shemaiah, the son of Delaiah, son of Mehetabel, who was confined to his home, he said. Now, I don't know why he was confined to his home here. Because Nehemiah is the guy that's in charge. And so he seems to have been the one that would have confined him. But if he'd confined him, why would he have come to talk to him? So my only guess that I can offer to you is that perhaps this guy had reached out to Nehemiah and apologized for whatever it was that he'd done before that got him into trouble and said, look, I want to help you out. Instead of being a problem for you, I want to be a problem solver. And so this is what he says. He said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple. So let's go to the temple shrine building together, you and me. Let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. They are coming to kill you by night. So here is what he effectively tells Nehemiah. I have inside information that there is an assassin coming after you. I want to help you escape. So let's you and me go to the most secure building in Jerusalem, the most secure building in Judea, the temple shrine building. There's only one way in. Let's go in there, close the front door, that great big massive door, and bar it shut, and save you from the assassin. Let's do that. Verse number 11. But I said, should such a man as I run away? So should a leader like me tuck his tail between his legs and run away? Is that the way leaders act? And then he continues, and what man such as I could go into the temple and live? As far as we know, Nehemiah is not of the Levitical family. He is not from the tribe of Levi. So he's not a Levite, and he's definitely not a priest. And only priests are supposed to go inside that shrine building, and they only do it when they have business in there, such as the trimming or the tending of the menorah lights or the changing of the bread of the presence or praying twice a day at the prayer altar, the altar of incense. Those are the only reasons a priest should be in that building, and Nehemiah has no reason to be in there. So he says, I will not go in. I'm not going to go into the shrine building. And then he lets us all know his assessment of this guy. Verse 12, and I understood and saw that God had not sent him. Now that kind of hints at the idea that the guy might have said, look, God told me to do something for you, to save you from the assassin, take you into the temple building and protect you there. And so Nehemiah's response is, at that point I realized after his suggestion, he's not from God, but that he had pronounced the prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him, that he'd effectively been bribed by the bad guys up in Samaria to get Nehemiah in trouble with the people. Because if he had violated the law by going into the shrine building, it would have broken his moral authority. Because you can't be a lawbreaker and be the promoter of the law. No one is above the law. Even the lawmakers have to keep the law. And so if he had gone in there, it would have busted him down in the eyes of the people. Then verse 13, for this purpose he was hired, that I should be afraid and act in this way and then sin by violating the sanctity of the holy place. And so they'd give me a bad name in order to taunt me. So he understood perfectly what the plot was, and he resisted it. And then he prays again. I love the prayers. Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, oh my God, according to these things that they did. So he basically asked God to put a curse on these people for trying to be this way. and also the prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets who wanted to make me afraid. So now we find out that there were others claiming to be prophets or prophetesses that were involved in this plot to get him to go into the temple building and thereby be discredited. And so he prays even against them. And isn't that a sad thing when we hear about people claiming to be believers and even leaders among believers plotting against those that are the true believers and doing things against them that go against God? Let's continue in verse number 15. The thing that we've been driving toward here. Verse 15, so the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month Elul in 52 days. So that would be, by our calendar, basically the 21st day of September in 444 BC. So the end of summer, the beginning of fall. And 52 days, that excludes every seventh day. So it's even less days that were involved in this project. And yet they got it done. Verse 16, and when all our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid, and they fell greatly in their own esteem, meaning they started thinking we must not be doing things right because we can't get the Jewish people to stop building their wall. For they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. So they also are starting to think the Jewish people have a very powerful God behind them. Nehemiah has a very powerful God behind him. And that's why we can't stand against them. Verse 17. Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah, and Tobiah's letters came to them. So now we find out there's correspondence going on between some, not all, but some of the leaders in Judah province, Jewish leaders, with this Tobiah guy, the Ammonite. So why is there correspondence going on? Well, verse 18, for many in Judah were bound by oath to him because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Arah, and his son, Jehohanan, had taken the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, as his wife. So we find out that Tobiah the Ammonite has intermarried himself personally and then his son into the Jewish tribes, into the Israeli nation. And so he has family members, in-laws, that are leaders in Judah. And so he's putting the pressure on them to stop the wall project. Stand up against Nehemiah. Don't let him have his way. This is part of the problem that Ezra had tried to take care of about a dozen years earlier when he first arrived. He found out that there were some of the leaders that had married non-Israelis and that they were, because of that, compromised into other faiths. Now, he had forced divorces on many of those people, but apparently not all of those leaders consented to the divorces, or perhaps they've restarted the process again. But that's why Tobiah has so much influence in Judea, is because he has in-laws in high places there. And they also become part of a spy network against Nehemiah. Verse 19 says, also they spoke of his good deeds in my presence, meaning they tried to convince Nehemiah to support Tobiah, to be a friend of his too. And they reported my words to him. So they ratted Nehemiah out. Anything that he said, anything that he planned, sooner or later, it would be reported to Tobiah. And then Tobiah also kept up his own pressure campaign in correspondence with Nehemiah. Tobiah sent letters to make me afraid. So constantly threatening Nehemiah from his position of influence there with some of the noble families. Chapter number 7, The thing that happens next after he's finished the temple is he has to put the logistical stuff in place. Verse number one says, now when the walls had been built and I'd set up the doors and the gatekeepers, the singers and the Levites had been appointed. So basically I've got everything done and now we're putting the logistical structure back in place, tweaked according to where these gates are at now. Verse two, I gave my brother Hanani and Hananiah, the governor of the castle, charge over Jerusalem, for he was a more faithful and God-fearing man than many. Now, Nehemiah has been taking very personal charge of the building project, getting the walls of Jerusalem built. But his job that's going to be ongoing once that project is finished is to be governor of the entire Jewish province, of all the Jewish people living in this area. So he can't leave his focus completely on Jerusalem and on the temple. So he hands it off to his brother Hanani and another guy, Hananiah, to watch over the Jerusalem affairs. And the reason he chooses these guys is because they are very good, righteous men. They are God-fearing. And they'll do the right thing. But he does give them very specific instructions to follow. And it's related to these new gates that are in place. Verse 3, I said to them, let not the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun is hot. So the gates are not going to be open 24 hours a day. They're going to be closed at night. And Nehemiah says, I don't want those gates opened until it's fully day. Now, what time of day is the sun getting hot? I think it's probably a reference to maybe 8 o'clock or so. Basically, don't open the gates until people are starting to come in to go to the temple area for the morning prayer service, which was always mid-morning. We'd call it about 9 o'clock in the morning. So the gates shouldn't be opened until 7:30, 8 o'clock, something of that neighborhood. And then, while they're still standing guard, let them shut and bar the doors. So at the end of the business day, as the sun is going down, or maybe it's just set, get those doors shut again and get them barred. So they're going to be closed all night long to provide security. That's what Nehemiah wants. A complete lockdown every single night. Then he says this, appoint guards from among the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so hometown guards, some at their own guard posts and some in front of their own homes. So there's going to be guard posts around the different areas of the wall and also in the city proper. And so he wants hometown guards posted to those guard posts. But he also wants some of them patrolling the area right near their own residence, because that'll make them more attentive. Verse 4, the city was wide and large, but the people within it were few, and no houses had been rebuilt. Now, this is the characteristic of the city that we need to understand. When Zerubbabel and Joshua the high priest and the first groups started to come back, tens of thousands of them, to reestablish the Jewish presence in the Jewish homeland. Most of those people did not build houses at Jerusalem. They built the temple, but they worked and lived in their inheritance farms and homesteads elsewhere. So even after Zerubbabel and Ezra and now Nehemiah have been bringing people back, Jerusalem proper is scantily populated. You know, few hundreds of people living inside these rebuilt walls. So they're going to want to change that. They're going to want the city to be fully populated. And so that drives Nehemiah to the records. So verse number 5, then my God put it in my heart to assemble the nobles and the officials and the people to be enrolled by genealogy. So he wants to do a census to see who all is living in the country and where are they living. Now, while he's working on his own census, he finds a previous one. He says, I found the book of the genealogy of those who came up at the first, and this is what I found written in it. So this is now the record of the first returnees. And you have yourself a great weekend. And when we get back into God's Word next week, this is where we'll begin.